First, get everything out of the house. Now the kohen will come and he'll decide whether it's ritually impure or not. Well, that would be ridiculous if it's a contagious disease. To the contrary, you keep everything in the house and you quarantine it off. You don't remove everything from the house. Somebody who had the disease was not examined on Shabbos, Yontif, or during Sheva Brachos. Right? On Shabbos, Yontif, or the week after he got married, a person didn't get examined for Shabbos, so he wouldn't ruin his day. Now, you didn't examine him on Shabbos, so he didn't ruin his day. Well, that's ridiculous, right? And you talk about a dangerous, contagious disease. A house in Yerushalayim could not be declared Tameh. No matter how tsaras it looked like, it couldn't be declared Tameh. A non-Jew was not inspected. A non-Jew could not become into Tameh. All these things are indications that you're talking about a phenomenon which is supernatural and it's specifically dictated by God when it's going to come.
Why don't we have it anymore?
I'm sorry? Because we haven't got a base of English, we haven't got Kohanim, we've got no way to bring the korbanos that are required afterwards. They have to bring korbanos after you've gone through this ritual, this period of ritual impurity. And the bottom line is that nowadays, even if we had it, we would figure out a way to deny that it has anything to do with God. The same question, why aren't there miracles nowadays? People ask, well, how come God doesn't perform miracles? Why did God split the sea for us nowadays? What's the answer?
People don't appreciate it.
The answer, what?
People don't appreciate it.
Of course. So no, what if he split the sea? Even if God would split the sea.
Come on, man. People said that because they're going to do away with the Holy Shift free choice. Then we have to be religious. And that's not what God wants. So that's an argument that makes sense. The sea split into two, but I think that a lot of people would believe.
So you should know that when the 1973 war took place in Israel, that after 1973, they could not fill the order for tefillin in this country. There was such a demand for tefillin, there was a shortage of tefillin, because all the soldiers coming back from the war said, well, obviously, I saw miracles in this war, and I'm going to be firm. I saw the hand of God. Within 2 weeks, it died down. What happened? 2 weeks ago, you would have sworn you saw a miracle. The nature of a miracle is such that if you're on the level, how come nowadays, right,
the people that ordered to fit in, they had seen them.
Right, and after, you talk about technical. I'm telling you, there's a fever. There was a tremendous fever after the war, a tremendous religious fever, and that dies down. Right, that's natural human tendency. That afterwards it starts to cool off, and you start coming up with explanations. Why do we need to see the splitting? If we saw a splitting in the sea nowadays, we have a Bible. We have the Torah. The Torah tells us the sea splits. Yet people go and try to explain it away as a natural phenomenon, right? So what's the difference if they see it with their eyes or it's written in the Torah? Either way, the same exact splitting of the sea could be explained as a natural phenomenon. There's nothing you can't explain as a natural life. You say, well, some type of gust of wind that didn't split, like they say about the Torah splitting of the sea. The whole point is that if you want to believe, you'll believe. If you don't want to believe, you'll figure out a way to deny it, right? We see divine providence every day and we try to ignore it. Right? People adore it. We just saw you were here. I was in Israel for the Gulf War. I saw the sites where those missiles hit in Israel. And after 39 Scud missiles hit and one person was killed. One Scud missile hit the American barracks and they killed, what was it, 100 soldiers, 200 soldiers? 39 Scud missiles destroyed entire buildings. Not one person, the entire time was killed. Right? I mean, what would you call it? You know, it's a miracle. Yeah.
I know, I believe that everything around us is a miracle. Everything, this cup is a miracle, the table is a miracle, but what is it that determines, I don't want to impinge on my bitachon, but what is it that determines Hashem's involvement in a...
That's a very good question. What you're asking is what determines if something is a miracle?
No. What I'm saying is, why is it that some things, why is it a bomb blows up one day, and the next day they would have walked? Do you understand what I'm saying? So why is it that one day he did intervene and the next day he decides to intervene?
So the bottom line is you're right. The bottom line, you know the story of Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa was the one who on Erev Shabbos, his wife said to him, we don't have any oil for the candles. So he said to her, okay, burn vinegar instead. Right? So his wife said to him, did you understand what I was talking about? I said, we don't have oil for the candle. Hey, vinegar don't burn. So he said to her, the same God that said oil should burn, same God will tell the vinegar to burn. Right? She lit the vinegar, poured vinegar, she lit the vinegar, the vinegar burned all Shabbos till Motzei Shabbos. It was a miracle in itself, in of itself, right? Now, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, I guarantee you that when his light lit the vinegar, right, if he would have looked and say, wow, the vinegar is burning, right, I guarantee you the vinegar wouldn't have burned, right? The only reason it worked, it happened for him, is because he was on such a high level that to him, every single thing that took place is clearly the hand of God. Therefore, to him, there's no big difference. To us, we're not on that level, therefore we need to see the hand of God. We take for granted the fact that we're able to speak. The cup's on the table, all your small examples, we take all of that for granted, right? The fact remains that the only thing that convinces us is when we see something outstanding. Now, the splitting of the sea, you should know, the Torah itself describes it in terms that could be understood as natural terms. A wind blew all night, and the waters split. Right? So you can understand there was some type of ichbeis, whatever. What's the definition of the miracle? The definition of the miracle is the timing. Right? The fact that that wind blew right at the moment that the Jewish people, 600,000 people, needed to cross the sea. A couple million people needed to cross. At that moment the sea split, that's the miracle. Because any event you can think of, any event you can think of, if I want to be obstinate, which very often scoffers, non-believers want to be obstinate, or they are obstinate, any event you could name, I could explain it away naturally. Right? Even if he would certainly disappear and reappear right now. Right? He would turn invisible and he would reappear. Right? So if I wanted to, I could explain that naturally. I could, well, it has to do with the lighting in the room. All of us went through a certain reaction where at our angle we didn't see him. Right? Such explanations could be made up. The bottom, what would make it into a miracle is if I say to you, at 5 o'clock this afternoon, he's going to disappear. Right? And then at that moment, we lose that type of thing. Right? So that's how you define a miracle. Nowadays, you're right. It also has to do with free choice. Right? But we would only do with free choice for a very short period of time. Because after a while, we would figure out a way to not be as impressed with it. We've seen it in Israel. We've seen open miracles in Israel that we've managed to forget about. Yes, sir, Elon.
You got here the three types of leprosy. You got the first one, which was the physical, or the spiritual, the leprosy. The second one, the house and the clothing. The third one was? Or is it the house and then the house?
All of these leprosies are spiritual. All three leprosies are spiritual. You've got house, clothing, and body. House, clothing, body, they're all spiritual leprosies. They're all spiritual.
No, I mean, not a physical leprosy, but it's on the body, I mean. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
If someone gets the leprosy, first it's it can go directly to your body, or it has to go...
Depends for what avera. It depends for what avera.
So it's not like we told you one time in the wall, then we told you one second time in your clothes, and then
So if a person, I'll give you an example. One example is, let's say a person is arrogant, right? Now arrogance could be, we spoke about this, arrogance could be, even if you behave very humbly, and you behave in a very a contrite way, you can still be guilty of arrogance, right? And at a certain point, a person has to look up, he looks on the walls of his house, and he says, uh-oh, I got leprosy here, right? Then you go to the coin says, that's right, it's tummy. The coin sits down with you, has a little talk with you, and he says, you know what? I recommend you start studying Musar on the trait of humility, right? Because you have not absorbed it properly. So a person has to control, he has to start fixing himself up. If he's successful fixing himself up, the leprosy will go away. That'll be the end of the story. If he persists, then the leprosy will spread. And it may hit his clothing, which means it's getting closer to home, right? You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Eventually, if he persists, it'll get to his body. The one leprosy, the one avera, that can cause a direct attack on the body, skipping the walls of the home and skipping the clothing, is Lashon Hara. For Lashon Hara, the leprosy hits directly home, right? Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about her brother, and Miriam herself turned into, she had a cave, got straight to the body, she got leprosy. Okay? That is the most common form of leprosy. Yeah.
Isn't there another one where
you take a vow? Leprosy, Tzaraas. What's that?
Where you take a vow in the temple, and if you lie, you get leprosy.
There's a whole list. The Medrash lists a whole bunch of causes. I don't remember offhand. For various aveiras, the person can get punished with tzaraas. One of the reasons the person may get tzaraas on the walls of his house is that somebody comes to borrow something from you. Right? You have a shovel I can borrow. Say, no, I don't. Right? The next day you may get tzaraas on the walls of your house. You'll be forced to take everything outside your house, and then everybody's going to say, hey, that guy does have a shovel. Right? He won't lend out his equipment. Right? A way of humiliating you, hopefully changing that selfishness that you have. That's another way it can come. Jamie?
But are we still not punished today? Like, for instance, I heard once that if someone wants to pull out some tzedakah from their pocket, he pulls out, like, and he hasn't got anything in there to give this guy his punishment.
I told you, nowadays, the Gemara says if a person reaches into his pocket, pull out 3 coins. He pulls out 2 coins. Now he's going to reach his hand in his pocket again. It's a form of suffering. Right? There is, of course, divine providence, right? God, but it's not quite as openly obvious to us, especially since we choose not to see it. And we're looking to not find it, therefore we don't.
That's really it. The way, because if you've been punished, you know, because you're looking at a few sins, you know, it's better to be punished this way than, you know,
tripping. Well, look, hopefully that should be the worst thing that happens, otherwise you have to put your hand in our pocket a second time. But the Gemara says that when a person sees he's suffering, what do you do? What should be the reaction response to suffering?
Right.
The Gemara says that when a person sees he's suffering, he should make a careful search of himself to find out what is the cause of the suffering. I mean, a person breaks his hand, for instance, right? A person has to think to himself, what did I do? I could have broken my hand, right? Let's see, I've shoplifted, I've punched people, I put non-kosher food into my mouth, I touched things I shouldn't have touched, I've turned on light switches on Shabbos. Could be any one of many reasons, right? We're not supposed to assume that we know the reason why. The Gemara doesn't say, search until you come up with the exact reason why. What we're supposed to do is search and see if we can find possibilities. Right? Because we're not God. We can never say why. Right? I may have thought to myself, let's say I broke my hand. Yesterday I punched somebody and I broke his jaw. Right? Today I broke my jaw. Well, obviously that's the reason I broke my jaw is because yesterday I broke his jaw. Possibility. It could also be because 10 years ago, I chewed non-kosher food with my jaw. Right? So we never know for sure that we've hit the reason, but that's not the point. The point is that it causes us to do an entire search, and I'm coming up with all sorts of neat things I might have done with my jaw. Right? I might have bit my dentist when he a little harder than I should have. I might have eaten non-kosher food. I might have spoken Lashon Hara with my jaw. I might have given somebody a headbutt in a football game. All sorts of reasons. At least it gets me thinking. And by getting me thinking and aware, conscious, of what I might have done wrong, I'll start fixing it up. The other way, I'm not going to fix it up at all.
If suffering is something to do with what you've done before, how can children suffer if they are then you'll be ultimately responsible for their actions?
Very good question. So how could children suffer? So there are one or two possibilities. The best explanation I have for infant mortality, for instance, how could a child die in childbirth? How could an infant die, crib death, Hashem? Any of these things, how could it possibly happen? The best explanation I have for it is reincarnation. And reincarnation is the best explanation because it covers everything, right? We believe in reincarnation. He had very often like an explanation for a child in childbirth. Remember, all the factors have to fit. So, you have a child who's born. That child may possess a very holy soul who in his previous life was on such a high level that he does not have to come back to this world for a full 70 years. All he needs, all that soul needs, is to go through the suffering of childbirth, of being born, which is no party for the child. All he needs is to be born and die at childbirth. That suffering will be enough of an atonement for his soul that his soul can now get to wherever it is he had to get to, based on his previous life. At the same time, his parents may be reincarnations of certain souls who need to go through the suffering of losing a child. And all of this has to work perfectly, right? Remember, in a broader plan, the grandparents also have to be either reincarnations or for something they've done in this life, they need to go through that suffering. But everybody who suffers at all from that event, that's all got to fit in with the overall plan. So the easiest way to explain it is by making use of reincarnation. Right? If you want another explanation, it could be that a good Baruch Hu will punish the parent by taking the child early, and that child, whatever he would have gotten in this world, will get it made up for him in the world to come. Right? God has all sorts of ways so that nobody ends up losing. Right? But very often, the easiest explanation for what we look at as unreasonable suffering, the easiest explanation is reincarnation, which is something that's a fundamental of the faith. And the souls are reincarnated, so that's not a problem. But what you have to be very careful of, people make this mistake all the time, is people, something happens to them, and versus, I know why this happened. Right? You don't know, you have no idea why this happened. You may be way off, right? You may have broken your fist, right? And you say, well, I broke my fist because yesterday I punched somebody. Maybe not. Maybe you broke your fist because 14 years ago you forgot to put on tefillin one morning. What's that got to do with my fist? Right? Or you didn't put on tzitzis. What's that got to do with my fist? I have no idea, but in God's overall plan of values, that might be the parallel, right? And you may have no idea, you may be completely wrong. So you can never say, well, I know why this is happening, because you're not God. And the worst thing about if you're searching for it, what that'll do is it'll help you to find, realize things you've done wrong that you need to do too before. That doesn't mean that this is the reason why, right? And I certainly have to improve on that. Right? So if a person has eye pain, or a person has head pain, right? That's the thing. What did I do with my eyes? What did I do with my head? Doesn't mean that that's the reason, but at least it'll get me thinking, I'll do tshuva. Okay. Worst thing you can do is to come up to somebody else and tell them you know why they're suffering. Right? The response is, well, I know why you're about to suffer, right?